And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 640. We're going to talk some second, third-year players, talk some recent fantasy news, and much, much more. In order to help me talk about these players and talk some more fantasy for you all for the 2024 season, friend of mine, friend of the show, you can find his work over at RotoWire, of course, as he's the lead prospect analyst, senior editor for the baseball side of things. You can find him on Twitter at RealJRAnderson. James Anderson, how you doing, my friend?
Doing great, Bubba. Really appreciate the invite and looking forward to chatting fantasy baseball with you.
Yeah, going to be fun. It's been a little while. Why don't you, before we get started, remind everybody what you got going at RotoWire. I know you just dropped your top 400 and all that other good stuff.
Yep. Top 400 prospect rankings were fully updated on January 15th, right after the international class signed. First-year player draft, top 100 rankings are up on the site as well, and the Dynasty top 400 was updated yesterday, so that's a brand new update. We've got just a ton of cool stuff on the site. It's the prime time to sign up for your baseball subscription if you haven't already at rotowire.com. So yeah, I mean, just a lot going on. I'll be pumping out more articles here in the coming weeks, and yeah, just ton of good stuff up on rotowire.com.
Yep, go check them out. Always a good site, always good people. So, rotowire.com. Let's talk about some recent fantasy news here. A lot of relievers have been set in motion over the last couple of weeks. We'll start with Josh Hader heading to the Houston Astros, the surprise of some, with Ryan Pressly in there. We know Presley's got the saves in recent years, but sometimes there's shakiness. He's had injury concerns, bringing in probably one of the top closers in baseball. Not a bad thing. So how do you feel like this shakes out? It feels like it's Josh Hader's role. But all things considered, what's your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I think the biggest loser here to me, I mean, it's Pressly obviously is a loser just because people were drafting him as sort of a safe-ish option towards the top of the closer pool. And now you're kind of in a limbo with him because I don't really think you can drop Pressly yet. Maybe in some really shallow leagues you could do that, but it's kind of like your hands are tied with Pressly, especially if you drafted him before the Hader news. You probably want to at least see how the first couple of weeks go. But then like Brian Abreu was one of my favorite non-closer targets, you know, like just a guy that if something happened to Pressly, he could be just a premium closer in waiting. But while Pressly was healthy, you would still be getting great ratios, great strikeouts. And now Abreu is clearly third. So like he's just much less appealing because even if something happened to Hader or Pressly, you would assume the other one would get the saves and not Abreu. So, he's a big loser here in the short term and the long term. I know a lot of people in Dynasty Leagues were probably holding Abreu as the guy that would step in once Pressly moved on. And it does look like it's going to be Hader there. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a tough break if you drafted Pressly as your first closer.
Yeah, you're right. Pressly was that guy that after like the elite, maybe or top like 6-7 guys, you're like, okay, I'll drop Pressly, give you 30 saves, we'll move on and kind of see where it goes. But Hader slots in, and I love the Abreu thoughts because I've had Dom on, the bullpen guru from Reliever Recon, and we were talking about Abreu as people's like one of their favorite later gladiator picks, because if you're like, you weren't worried about saves, but you wanted elite ratios, like you mentioned, guy had 100 strikeouts in 72 innings last year. That's amazing stuff. Sub 2 ERA and back-to-back years will still be good. But yeah, like you said, not the guy we were hoping for. Michael Busch. Many people have been waiting for Michael Busch to get kind of freed from the Dodgers just because there's so much talent in the majors that it's blocked Busch from a regular job. He now gets traded to the Cubs. What are our thoughts on Busch in Chicago? Is he kind of going to let run free, do we think, and flourish, or what are you expecting?
Yeah, I think I've been lower on Busch probably like ever since he became a prospect. Like I was not, screaming free Michael Busch necessarily. I think there's some stuff in the profile where I quad A hitter is still an outcome that's possible here with Busch. Obviously, he was awesome at AAA last year, but he was a 24-year-old at AAA in 2022 and was basically a league average hitter, and then he repeats the level and he's awesome. So to me, that didn't like prove anything. You know, if you're a bat first baseman, DH, and you go back to the PCL and you are better than you were the previous season, that's what you should do, right? Like he hasn't proven anything to me yet. That said, I mean, I think he's a better candidate to be a regular for them, or at least a strong side platoon option for them than Matt Mervis, who I think has even stronger quad A red flags than Bush does. But, you know, to me, this is one where like, if Bush is shooting up draft boards because of this signing, I will let somebody else make that investment. Just because I don't think he's a sure thing at all. Like I think he's a guy that if you drafted him maybe before that move as sort of a clear bench bat on like a draft and hold roster or something like that, then I think you did all right. But like I don't think Bush is a sure thing by any stretch. And you know, they do still have Matt Mervis. They do still have Wisdom there as a platoon option for Bush. So I don't think he's just like a no doubt like guy that just needed to be freed, needed to be playing every day. He obviously wasn't going to do that in LA, but I think in some cases he's been a little overhyped as this guy that just needed to be freed. Like I don't think it's a given that he hits like a big league first baseman should as a 25 or 26 year old this year.
The age thing is a bit surprising for people that aren't like hardcore prospect people to expect with like the hype. You'd expect him to be 22, 23, maybe younger. The fact he's going to be 26, and you mentioned the draft price. He's over the last 10 draft champions drafts, ADP is around 340. He's gone as high as 250 in one of those drafts. He's moving up because I was looking back in that too early one we did. Apparently I'm the one that got him at 451. So that was a big difference, and we'll see where this all the dust settles on that one. Marcus Stroman heading to the Bronx. Is kind of one of the quieter targets of many, as the, you know, the Montgomery still out there, another top Blake Snell still out there. But Stroman signs in New York, injury riddled the last season or two with him, but we kind of know who Stroman is by now. How are you liking this move to the Yankees?
I think it makes sense for the Yankees because they just, you know, other than Garrett Cole, you can't really trust anyone else in that rotation. So having a guy like Stroman, like you said, a guy that you kind of know what you're getting, I think that makes sense for them. But I went and looked at the recent ADP since he signed there, and there's probably like a dozen or more guys going after him that I'd rather take in the mid to late 200s. You know, he's a safe low upside option for fantasy, but there's just a lot of guys that I'd rather roll the dice on his teammate Nestor Cortez, who's going after Stroman. I'd rather take Kyle Harrison. I'd rather take John Means. I'd rather take Louis Varland. I'd rather take Jameson Taillon, Luis Severino, Chris Paddock. Like there's just a bunch of guys going after him where there's maybe not the type of floor you're getting with Stroman, but it's not a high enough floor where you're just starting Stroman every week in your league. You're still looking at the matchups. He's not just a set it and forget it type of guy. So I'd rather draft a guy that has the upside to become a guy that I'm starting every week.
Yeah, he's like the Andrew Benintendi of pitchers, where he's just there and doesn't really you don't trust him every week to help your fantasy team. So I'm with you on that one. It's one of those that, especially in a fab league where he's going, you can find those guys on the waiver wire anytime you need, basically. So, or hopefully anytime you need. Jordan Hicks, you don't have to go deep into this. I've heard a million people talk about it. I threw it on the list because it's part of the moves. But Giants signed him. They said they're going to stretch him out. It's going to be a slow stretch from what I've read. It's going to and there's incentives on innings and all kinds of things. So take for it what you wish. But what's your thoughts on Jordan Hicks being on Giants? Because I just think it's more of a maybe opener situation, long relief guy for the most part.
Yeah, I thought he was an interesting closer spec option before he signed, because I thought, you know, there are probably a half dozen teams he could have signed with and been the best reliever in the bullpen. But this takes away all of that luster because Camilo Duvall is awesome. And I just not drafting Jordan Hicks now.
No, I just threw it on there because it was one of them with you. I was the only optimism I had when he got traded to some of my Giants buddies. I was like, well, you know, for some reason, something happens to Duvall, we got a guy that can be lights out, but they'd have to move him back there. And with incentives, I don't think that's going to happen. So we'll see how that plays out. Robert Stevenson signed with the Angels. That caused a kerfuffle on Twitter, which was fun. an elite reliever. We know this with Tampa Bay. Carlos Estevez is closer in Anaheim, but we know the warts that Carlos Estevez brings with him. So what's your thoughts on Stevenson going to the Angels?
Yeah, he's a guy that there's too many question marks for me to draft him and think that I'm getting 25 saves. It would make sense to me, I guess, to have Carlos Estevez remain in the ninth inning there and have Robert Stevenson be the fireman. You're also talking about a guy who is going from, the best team maybe for developing relievers to a team that doesn't really know what they're doing at all. So, just a major downgrade in terms of the people he's going to be working with on a day-to-day basis. He's going to have pretty good relievers, I would think, or pretty good ratios. But I just don't think you can say with any confidence he's going to be the closer there. And, when I'm taking relievers in the top 300, I'm looking for saves above all else. And I don't think you can rely on him for that.
Yeah, because he's, like you said, he's getting pushed. I know Kerlin's tweeted it. He's on as high as 240 in the last 10 drafts. It's really getting pushed up there. Kerlin's been in two DCs since the trades or the signings happened, and he tweeted out where he's going, and he's climbing quickly. People are on the Stevenson trains. Like you said, with so much uncertainty, that could work out really well, but also could burn you in a massive way. Talking about burning you in a massive way, Joey Gallo signed with the Washington Nationals, and we all know he could hit the ball a country mile, and we also know that he can provide the biggest wind tunnel in Washington now. So what's your thoughts on Joey Gallo? Like, literally, he's ADP's past 700 last time I checked.
Yeah, I mean, unless you're playing in a
strikeouts count league.
OBP league, there's something there. And if you're just in an OBP league, because he will probably get to 25 homers. I wouldn't roster him if I thought he was going to hit 220, let alone 180.
Exactly. I'm with you. It's I'm one of those Nationals, I guess. It's a cheap, we need someone to play a position role, but that's about the only thing that worked for. This one's fun, though. This one's kind of in your backyard there. Rhys Hoskins. I've always been a gigantic Rhys fan. He's a Northern California guy, so that's always a perk, too. But to me, he's just like a consistent guy where I think there's maybe more upside than we've actually seen. But at worst, you just look at his player page. It's like 245, 25 to 30 home runs. Like, this is what Rhys Hoskins does. And now he's a member of the Brewers. So what's your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, basically the best landing spot you could have realistically hoped for if you drafted him as a free agent. And I regret not having him. Like, he was one of those guys where he was someone I was considering as a free agent because I've always liked him as well. And I think you're right. Like, he hit the 34 homers back in 2018 and then he hit 30 in 2022. I think he could get back over 30 if he can stay healthy with the Brewers. And obviously he's going to hit right in the middle of that lineup. They really don't have another guy on the team with his track record as a run producer. So I think it's a great fit for the team. Great fit for Hoskins. Where's he been going lately then?
Yeah. Over the last 10 drafts, 207, his high is 183. So that's kind of, he's getting pushed up, which makes sense. Cause if you start talking like 180s, that's going around you got Isak Paredes. I think he's better than Isak, honestly. So I'd be biased there, but I could see him getting pushed up a little bit more. So
yeah. Yeah. I'm like looking at the recent, Encarnacion Strand's going at like 152, Vinny Pasquantino like 165. I think Hoskins should be going with those guys at least.
100%. So I'm thinking around 150-ish, 145, 150 seems like a sweet spot for Hoskins right about now. A couple more here. James Paxton. This is one where I kind of brushed it off at first, and maybe for good reason. But his ADP, he's gone as high as 329 over the last 10 drafts. And he went and signed with the Dodgers, or it seems like it's a done deal to sign with the Dodgers. And we know how good he was at times last year, and then he kind of floundered out. Injury concerns always surround Paxton. But this is a Dodgers team that they made Ryan Yarbrough look fantasy viable last season in his role. They do you think this is a fantasy viable spot for Paxton, or is it more just because of the concerns it's somebody else's problem to play with?
Well, I was definitely annoyed by this signing. I'm a never Paxton type of guy. Like I really don't think I've ever rostered James Paxton. And so I'm just annoyed that the people that drafted him got the Dodgers landing spot. Because, you know, that's the dream, right?
Like, oh, I understand fully.
Draft a free agent pitcher and they sign with the Dodgers, you know, that's big. But I mean, I'm just still not gonna go near him. Just, you know, the durability issues are obviously well documented. They've just got so much depth that they could use him in kind of a multi-inning role, or maybe like a piggyback type of role as well. So if you drafted him before this signing, then I think he did very well. But I would not be paying the Dodgers tax on him right now.
Yep, I'm 100% with you. It's a guy I could see on a waiver wire at some point in time. Then he can play a streaming game if you so choose. John Brebbia, he signed with the White Sox, and the casual fan might go, who? I get it. But if you're a deeper, you know, fantasy person like we are, you know Brebbia was a pretty darn good reliever. Like, he was very, very serviceable with the Giants, not Brian Abreu, not Robert Stevenson. But the strikeouts were there, and he goes to the White Sox. This is why this is in question. Gregory Santos is technically the closer, so we think, and he had his issues as well. Do you think Brebbia has a chance? Is he worth maybe a late round option as a potential saves guy throughout, at least in drafts like a DC? Would this be a guy that you'd be interested in?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you certainly have seen him more than I have, but I don't trust anyone in that bullpen currently. I don't know how much I trust Brebbia necessarily, but you know, I think it's not that hard to construct an argument that he's the best reliever in that bullpen. And it just kind of depends what your philosophy or strategy is with saves. If you're kind of going for late closers, I think he's a great candidate to go after. I tend to be more like, I just like to get two guys that I trust more than a Brebbia. But I think in DCs, you know, like, even if it's Santos's job at the beginning of the season, if Brebbia stays healthy, there should at least be like stretches of the season where he's the de facto closer in that bullpen. The big problem, I hate rostering closers on teams that are as bad as I expect the White Sox to be, because you just get into this cycle during the season where you bench them and they get two saves, and then you plug them into your lineup, and then they go like 3 weeks without getting a save. So it's just, I don't like that frustration necessarily, especially if I'm relying on the guy to get me saves. But if he's like your fourth reliever or something like that, I think it's great.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Is these bad teams, where the joke is, well, if they only win 60 games and only 20 of them are savable, like, what are we doing here, wasting our time on them? And that's where you're trying to figure out when those 20 hits is always a disaster. I will say, with Brebbia, over the last 10 DCs, he's been drafted in four of them. I'm guessing most of those came since the move. He's gone as high as 442. That might be even too rich for my blood. But Steamer has him for 12 saves. ATC has not updated that yet. So we'll kind of see where that all lands on. But I wouldn't be shocked if he ends up with like 8 to 10 saves. Just kind of, but like you said, finding those days to start, weeks to start him, could be a gigantic hassle. Speaking of another team with maybe a changing of the guard in the back of the bullpen, or somebody that put some pressure on someone, the Rangers signed David Robertson, veteran reliever. We've seen have really good years as a closer, some murky years as well, but he's got the experience. And you have Jose Leclerc, who came on and got a handful of saves to end the season. But I don't know, Leclerc's never done it for me. He feels more pitch to contact-y, and there's like, that always concerns me with the reliever. Could be totally wrong. What's your thoughts on Robertson going to join the Rangers?
Yeah, I like Robertson. You know, again, I usually don't kind of shop in that range of closers, but it just seemed he's a ninth inning type of guy to me. Like, I think you bring Robertson in with the idea of having him as your closer, and then if, you know, if he's shaky, you can move him to a setup role. But Yeah, I've never really been a Leclerc guy either, more just because of the control than anything else. But it's, you know, he's the type of guy that I think fits better in a setup role. Whether Robertson still has the goods to kind of be a closer for a several month stretch without losing the job, I think that's TBD. But I would bet on Robertson getting the first save for the Rangers. And it's kind of a, like, I liked Kirby Yates a little bit as like a long shot there because of my lack of faith in Leclerc. And I think the Robertson signing kind of dampens any hope of Yates emerging. But I mean, if you had Robertson, like, he was dirt cheap before this. So like, if you had Robertson, I think this is huge.
Yeah. Last 10, as low as 563, as high as 402. So if you're getting him post 500, that's good. 400 still good, but that's going to obviously continue to climb with this news that just dropped a couple days ago. All right, let's talk about some of these. Like, I was going to name them like sophomore seasons, but there's some third year guys. It's more like young players that finally had that year where you're like, okay, now I'm interested. Like, we've seen a little bit. Now, you obviously seen, or you followed all these guys. You've ranked them throughout your days at top 400s and everything. That's why I really want to hear your opinion, like, from what you saw when they're like even younger. Some of these guys are still like 23, which is ridiculous. But, and where they are like now, what do you expect the next step? As we've seen a lot of these really talented players in the past take the next step. Some, this is who they are. And that's kind of the question we're on here on draft day, is what are you thinking with them? So I'm just going to start with the one at the top. That is one of the most controversial, is not the right word, but you want to talk a hot topic, hot take of the fantasy world right now. That's Ellie De La Cruz. We all know everyone was hyped for him to come in last year. We saw the good, we saw the rough. Like, the guy can hit it a mile. He can throw it 110 miles an hour or whatever. He runs like crazy. Talented as all get up, but there's also holes in that swing, some big time holes in that swing. What's your thoughts on Ellie though? Because right now you have to pay, his ADP is like 20. So if you want him, you have to pay for Ellie De La Cruz. Now, do you think there's even another level, or are you thinking, are there concerns for you?
Yeah, so he's very complicated because I'm definitely more towards like being high on Ellie De La Cruz than just like, you know, you can't draft that guy, like his hit tool's crap. Like, I'm not like that on him at all. I think he's a guy that's just worked really hard. Like, he's someone I trust what he's doing in the off season. Like, I think he's going to be better this year than he was as a rookie. And I think the big area where he's going to be better is in the power department. You know, he only hit 13 homers in 98 games, worst ground ball rate of his professional career in the big leagues. It spiked by 11% from AAA to the big leagues. Ellie De La Cruz could hit 30 bombs easy this year. Like, that wouldn't surprise me. But it comes down to a roster construction issue to me. I just don't take guys in the first or second round who aren't going to really help my batting average. Like, I think that's the area of the draft where you have to be building that batting average base. And even into like the fifth, sixth, seventh round, like, I really care about batting average so that in the middle rounds, in the late rounds, I can take some shots on some guys that I think are going to hit 235. But if you start off with Ellie De La Cruz, you're going to get a bunch of counting stats, but you got to make up that batting average somewhere. You're just so far behind the rest of the teams because all these other guys who are getting drafted that high are going to hit 280, 290, 300. So I'm not going to do it because of the batting average. I think he's going to hit like 240 this year, 245, which is going to be fine. I think he's going to be very productive. It's just hard to really be strong in batting average with Ellie De La Cruz as one of your first two picks.
I love that answer, because it's either people like seem like they love him or they hate him. It's like, oh no, he's gonna go back to AAA because he strikes out too much, or there's this or there's that. But you at least gave the answer, like, yes, like, he's young, but he's gonna develop. He can hit this. It's the batting average. It's a legit statistic that we look at in fantasy that I honestly haven't even heard that many people come out and say, which makes 100% sense. Like, Bloomfield and I talk about it all the time of why Bloomfield's in love with Freddie Freeman, because like, you can just pencil in 300 plus, and if you're on a good year, 330 plus. Like, there's a ton of those guys at the top of the draft, like you're saying, that are huge in like 280. They're almost all 280 plus, almost all.
Yeah,
which it's like you said, with Ellie down there at 240, 245, that is a gigantic gap. That those are players you get in rounds and like picks 110, 120 and beyond. So that's a great point with the Ellie. I like that a lot. A different way to kind of look at the whole situation with him. Now it gets fun because this, and we're going to start with the Reds and we'll get elsewhere here just for the listeners. But a lot of it's because they have a lot of young talent we were excited to see last year, and they have a kind of crowded player pool. It's a tough situation to evaluate. And once Christian Encarnacion strand, like if you believe roster resource, he's projected on the bench. They went and signed Jaime Candelario. He's a better defender than Strand, at least so far in Strand's career. We do also know Strand can hit the ball a ton, and he got better and better as his time went on last year, 13 homers in 63 games, and he hit 270, which when I looked at that a while back, I was actually surprised it was that good. Like, I'm like, that's actually more impressive than I thought. So what's your thoughts on Strand, who right now, like you mentioned earlier with Hoskins, he's going on 155-ish, give or take. Are you in on that, or are you concerned about the playing time with him?
So the two guys that I think are going to really miss out from a playing time standpoint on the Reds are Jake Fraley and Jonathan India. I just think it's going to be premium lefty bat off the bench for Fraley, premium righty bat off the bench for India. And those guys will spell the other guys, from time to time. That said, I don't love the price on Encarnacion Strand. Like, I think you're not like paying for the best case scenario here, but it's not a 0% chance that Encarnacion Strand only is in a part-time role. It's probably not like a 30 or 40% chance, but even just like a 10% chance that Encarnacion Strand only gets to like 450 plate appearances this year makes that a bad pick to me. So there are other guys we're going to talk about where I think the price is right, but first baseman, we talked about Rhys Hoskins. Like, I think I would just take Rhys Hoskins straight up over CES because I know the plate appearances are going to be there. I know what the role is going to be with Hoskins. I love Tristan Casas. I love Josh Naylor. I like Spencer Torkelson. Like, I'd rather take those guys a couple rounds earlier and just kind of lock that production in than go chasing Encarnacion Strand's power. He does have the type of skill set to kind of make that look like a great pick. Like, he could hit 40 homers this year. But it's just, there's enough, just like a sliver of uncertainty there that I'm just going to be looking somewhere else.
Yeah, no, I wrote about it when Candelario got signed. I put a little article out, and it was just, it basically knocked Strand off my board. I just wasn't going to deal with it. Like you said, at that, I'll take those risks later in the draft because that's where they lie to me. Not at that point. If the Reds prove me wrong, so be it.
And but, I'll stay with him. I love Candelario because
so do I.
He's a really good hitter. And yeah. This is a park that just, it's a perfect park for him because he's the type of guy where, it's a lot of doubles power. And in that park, he could set career highs across the board. They didn't pay him that money to sit on the bench. So I love Candelario at his cost.
Yeah, we're on the same page. The biggest thing for me is like you said, they paid him money. The Reds don't spend money. Like, that just like spoke volumes to me. And he already set a career high in home runs last year. So let's see what he can do in Great American. I'm very interested in that. Matt McClain. This is like, he kind of got overshadowed from some other massive ads early in the season, but this was one of the best, if not the best, free agent prospect ad this past year. The power, the speed, he basically five categoried it for the most part. But you have to pay an ADP of 60 for McClain, basically in his second season now. Are we in on that price tag?
So, Bubba, I'm sure you've had guys like this as well, but I was higher than pretty much anyone on McClain coming into the draft in 2021 out of UCLA. And I remained extremely high on him until that 2022 season. I just really did not see that strikeout bump coming at Double A. And then I kind of got off of him. And I really regret doing that. I should have stayed the course a bit more with McClain. And I've come back around. Obviously, like, he was extremely impressive in that debut, but it's a little much to me, the price on him. I get it. You know, I love the dual eligibility. I love the park. Always looking for guys that are going to do a ton to help in all four of the counting stat categories, which he should do. It's maybe like a round too high for me. But you know, maybe I'm just kind of missing it on him. Like I missed it on him last year, but yeah, I haven't really thought about him at his ADP.
Yeah, I have zero shares as well. I'm with you on that one. I'm also, I have a weak spot potentially for these young players and should I believe situations. It's one reason I love doing the show with you on this one, but I just kind of need to see it twice. Now, given Great America, it'll make a lot of those fears go away, but kind of wait and see at that ADP. And also when I'm in drafts there, I'm probably getting a pitcher or something else that I need at that point in the draft, and it makes it tough to take him there.
I mean, honestly, I think like Andrés Giménez is going to have the exact same season as Matt McClain, and he's going like four rounds later.
I have a problem with the Guardians hitters right now. I like way too many of them at their price tags. I've got between NFBC, Underdog, I've got way too many Guardian shares right now. It's like how I was with the Brewers last year and it worked out okay, but we'll see how the Guardians go this year. And more confidence in the Brewers. Noelvi Marte, another red, the last red. Or no, I have one more red to talk about here. But Marte is the only other player on the NFBC to go number one overall in a draft this year, if you didn't see that one. So he's got that going for him. But ADP's around 173 right now. There's a lot to like about Marte, it feels like. I was happy when he got called up, especially late in Fab season, not much more affordable. But you got three homers, six steals in 35 games, hits for average. So what are our thoughts on Marte? Another reason why Strand's kind of in trouble, because Candelario will play first and Marte at third most likely.
Yeah, I like the cost on Marte, and I honestly don't see that big of a gap between him and Matt McClain, just in terms of the counting stats I expect from them. The biggest difference is Matt McClain's going to hit higher in the lineup than Marte. But if you just told me like one of them was going to hit fifth and one was going to hit sixth, like I think the production would be very, very similar. I definitely believe that the Reds, I really think they believe in Marte, Ellie, McClain as sort of key pieces that are going to play pretty much every day, third base, shortstop, second base. Marte is just, he's really toolsy. And he's kind of like what he did last year. I think just it's getting slept on a little bit too much. Just how much success he had as he climbed from double A, triple A, big leagues. Strikeout rate peaked at 20% in the big leagues. And this is a 21-year-old that started the year at double A. And he's a guy that could steal 20 bases. He could hit 25 homers. I mean, I think at his peak, I think Noelvi Marte is a guy that could go 30-20. And that's just great at shortstop. And obviously you love the park. You know, he could hit his way into a higher spot in that lineup too. You know, looking at the third basemen that are going around him recently, like Alec Bohm, Key Brian Hayes, I would take Marte over both those guys. I just think there's a similar floor and a much higher ceiling.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I was honestly surprised Marte's ADP is that low, I guess, is all things considered. It was kind of a, there's always a handful of those guys we see every year where it's like, huh, what am I missing where I'm looking at this? And his was always one that if you miss on third base or whatever, it's definitely one to maybe push up a round or two to make sure you get third base covered. But he's one of those that I'd be comfortable doing that with. Spencer Steer, like the Swiss Army knife for the Cincinnati Reds, played all over the place. He's projected to start in left field this year. His ADP is 126, as high as 111. I will say the caveat is a DC ADP. He's first base, third base, outfield. That will help that ADP a ton. Now, he'll probably still have a good price tag come, you know, Fab days. But what's your thoughts on Spencer Steer? Because he kind of just was like the unheralded guy. He played 156 games. He hit 23 homers, 15 steals, 271. He put together a great fantasy season. He just kind of seems under the radar because of all these other amazing prospects that got called up. So should we be believing in Steer is what I'm trying to figure out.
I think so. I think so. Like of all these Reds guys, he was the guy that I had on the most teams last year. The eligibility is just fantastic. It's such a bummer that he didn't get four more games at second base, because then he would really have the, he would kind of have the nuts in terms of position eligibility. And then I think you'd see him be going even higher.
Probably.
And he could add, you know, it's not completely impossible that he adds second base in season if McLean gets injured. But the big thing for Steer is, like, he's not a great defender, but he can play left field. And I think that they're just going to keep him in the lineup pretty much every day as the left fielder, as a guy they can move around a little bit. You can, like, look at where they hit him in the lineup last year, right? Like, he was just playing every day, usually hitting like third, fourth, or fifth. Like, I don't see them taking a player like that who is that productive for them and just moving him to a part-time role. So I feel good about Steer. It's a high price to pay for a guy who might only hit 20 homers and might only steal 10 bases. You know, maybe he gets to 15 again. I don't necessarily think he just completely reprises the production from last year. There might be a little bit of give back. But I trust him as a hitter. Like, I think he's just a really good hitter. He doesn't need to be platooned. And the eligibility is great. It's a high price. I think I've got him on one team, 1 out of 5 DCs so far. You know, I do like guys like Jake Berger, and, you know, we touched on Marte. Like, if I'm looking for third base, if I'm looking for first base, I might be looking for a bit more power. But, you know, I don't have any problem with Spencer Steer at his cost right now.
Yeah, he's the flexibility is tremendous. But the profile, the stat line, if you just cover the name up and everything, you can kind of find that scattered around the draft later on, so it makes it kind of tricky. But I'm with you. I think I have a couple shares. I've done way too many drafts. But, yeah, there is a place for him on a fantasy team for sure. All right, let's leave Cincinnati. Like, that's going to be a fun team to watch, just like it was last year. We'll see where it goes fantasy-wise. Let's go to Baltimore real quick. Gunnar Henderson, you know, rookie of the year, slow start, became more aggressive at the plate, ended up with 28 home runs, 10 steals, 255, 100 runs even, which is great. What are we thinking? Age 23 season, second full season in baseball. Is there another level to Mr. Gunnar Henderson?
Well, I think you nailed it with just how his season started. He was being way too passive. You know, he was just really kind of trying to draw too many walks, I think. And once he kind of flipped that switch to being a bit more aggressive, he just really fell into place for him. He kind of became the player people thought they were getting. Is there another level from what he showed, like, from June on? I don't know. I don't really think there needs to be, though. Like, you know, he basically hit like 275 on like a 30 homer pace, from when he kind of made that adjustment in terms of his approach. And I think the projections are too low on the batting average. Like, I'm seeing 261 from ATC, 261 from Steamer. Like, I think Gunnar Henderson's a 270, 280 hitter this year. I mean, his positional eligibility, it's only two spots, but it's middle corner.
Middle corner, yeah.
And that's just huge, especially – like, it just the way it happened for a lot of my teams last year is the teams where I had the most multi-eligible guys were my best teams, because it gives you so much flexibility in season and even like midweek.
I was gonna say, it's not just injuries. It's like that Friday roster lock or whatever. It changes everything.
Right. You can carry one less hitter if you've got the right guys with the right eligibility, and that just frees you up. Obviously, those bench spots are so valuable. I haven't ended up with Henderson yet, but I've been sniped on him a couple times, late second round. Henderson versus Devers is a tough one for me. I happily took Devers in one spot where I got sniped on Henderson, but the more I've looked at Devers, I might even take him just straight up over Henderson. But you know, I really like Henderson. I think the dual eligibility is great. The five category production is great. I don't really have anything bad to say about him. It's just kind of where is he going? Who's available when you're picking him? Like, I think he belongs at that end of the second round, beginning of third round range.
Yeah, he's got that 35 ADP. It's just one of those, again, a problem of mine. Like I said, I'll probably say too many times, young players, I just don't know what to trust. Like, it's an issue with me. But the improvements I saw, and that's the things I love to see, and we hit on it at the beginning, the improvements at the plate throughout the season is a very promising thing. The shortstop going right after him in the draft is Bo Bichette. Would you rather take a chance on Gunner, or do you go back with Bo?
I like Gunner 10 times out of 10.
Yeah, cool. Just wanted to go there. Bo Bichette, man, talk about how – that's why if we would have done the same show a year or two ago, Bo would probably be on the top of that list. And look, where it's crazy watching some of these young guys kind of take a step back. CJ Abrams going two picks after Gunnar Henderson. And we talked about, you know, Gunnar's changes throughout the season. CJ had a few too. He had a monster July, which was great. Still an overall great season. Ran wild, 47 stolen bases, but had the 18 home runs, hit 245. I was excited about Abrams last year because he didn't cost a ton. And it was, for in my theory, it's the first full year for a young player. Padres kind of like held him back. Nats had nothing to lose to let the kid play. And to me, I might be just overthinking it, he seemed to get comfortable as the season went on. And it's amazing what a 22-year-old can do when he finally gets, you know, that pressure kind of leaves a little bit. Could be wrong. What's your thoughts on CJ Abrams now after that first season, especially the way he finished it, kind of really getting going overall-wise and heading into 2024?
Yeah, I don't mind Abrams at all. I feel like he's been kind of similarly divisive to Ellie, but in this case, I'm in at the cost. I think, you know, third round, even like late third round in some cases, I think that's a fine time to take a guy who, you know, I think he's going to hit like 255 this year, in the 250 to 260 range. That's not going to kill you. That's basically like a league average batting average. And the stolen bases are just massive. And I think the key with Abrams is you can't look at last year as like, oh, do we think he can repeat that? Like, he could repeat that. He could also do a whole nother level to that. You know, he only hit 245. He had the 279 BABIP. Let's say he hits 255, like I could see him hitting 20 to 23 homers this year. It's a great park. Like, we know he's going to play every single day. We know he's going to hit top three in the lineup every single day. You know, he kind of unlocked a base stealing pace that, you know, maybe he just does that over the whole season instead of half the season. But like, you know, if he's healthy, he's going to get you 40 steals. Maybe he gets you 50 steals. I don't think we've seen CJ Abrams' best season yet. And I don't think you have to pay, you know, late third round for a guy that could go 20-40. I don't mind it.
Yeah, I was telling someone, I can't remember if it was on the Nats preview I did or something, that similarly you said, I don't think we've seen the best of CJ because still so young. Like, we talk about these players developing. He could get bigger still. Like, there's a lot of things that CJ could do where basically he's doing what we wanted Jazz Chisholm to do because he plays a full season. Jazz has more power, I'd say, but as a whole, you know what I'm saying. Like, this is what we wanted from Jazz, especially if he gets to like 25 home runs. This is what we wanted forever. And I agree. I think I said I would not be shocked if this conversation next year we're having a end of the first round potential discussion of CJ Abrams, and I would not, like, least shocking conversation out there. So I think there's a lot to like about this kid. Tariq Skubal. Now, we talked about some kind of, you know, controversial, maybe might be the wrong word, hitters. Skubal's the pitcher version of this because when he came back last year, it was nasty, elite. The question a lot of people have, 80 innings pitched. What do we expect in 2024? Because you have to pay for him. It's an ADP of 49 right now. He's not cheap for a guy that might have a limited inning situation. So how are you approaching Tariq Skubal? Because the Tigers want this to be their guy for the future. So you don't know if they're going to overuse him, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I fully buy Skubal's skills and what he showed last year. You know, he looks a little out of shape. I'd like him to just maybe spend a little bit more time with like the cardio and stuff like that. But I just am kind of amazed at how much buy-in there is with the ADP. Like, I thought Skubal might be a guy going in kind of the 60 to 75 type of range, you know, kind of like a SP2, like a premium SP2 maybe. And I guess for some people, he is a premium SP2 at like 45, but that's where I'm looking to take my SP1. And I don't know. It's kind of a stretch. Like I don't really see a difference between Skubal and Kyle Bradish. Bradish is going quite a bit later. I love the player. The cost is higher than I thought it would be back in November. And I do have one Skubal share. I don't know. The market loves him a little bit too much, I think.
I'm 100% on board with you. Like, I just can't stomach it. At that point, he could be in it. Where you're drafting him, he might be your SP1 if he waited a little bit. At worst, SP2. And that's rich for trying to figure that out. Like, Kelly Kirby's in the chat, and she's from Fantasy Pros. She buys the stuff like we do, just the Detroit's usage of him. What are they going to do? That's the million-dollar question. And that's one of those I'll be okay being wrong if he does well things. I'll just live with that and go from there. Now, this is a player you were not wrong on last year. You've always seems like you've been pretty high on Royce Lewis, and you mentioned it, I think, on one of my shows and other shows of yours, that this is the guy. If he comes up fab-wise, Royce is the dude you want. And when healthy, great. Seemed like a grand slam every other game. It was just amazing with Royce Lewis. But right now, you got to pay an ADP of 56. If healthy, like we just talked about C.J. Abrams being a first-round guy, Royce is up in the first, second-round discussion. Health is obviously the concern. Are you in an ADP of 56?
Yeah, I am. With him, I think you really have to look at percentage exposure. Like, I'm not going to end up with 60% CJ or 60% Royce Lewis exposure. If I can get to like 30% Royce Lewis at that cost, I'll be fine with that. I think he's a superstar, and it's just a question of how many games he plays. There was, like, at the very beginning of draft season, he was going like early third round, which I was not about at all. But now that he's going in the 50s, I think it's a really nice pick. He's so good. He does it all. It's just a question of the injuries, and one fully healthy season of Royce Lewis, and he'll be going at the end of the first round.
Yep, 100%. He's a athletically talented specimen that's just really good at baseball. And I'm with you. The early price stunk, and literally a draft I did last week, I think I took him in the fifth round. I was like, okay, I can do this. I can stomach this, especially at a third base position where things get a little weird in a DC. Just maybe back him up quicker. Go get Marte and like or something, and you're good. So definitely an option in that kind of deal. Nolan Jones, this was a fun one. 106 games last year, 2020. Never really ran in the minors, but again, he's still super, like, to me, young. He's going to be 26, not as young as the other guys, but finally got his first cup of coffee full time. He's going to be in the middle of that Rockies lineup. You have to pay an ADP of 57. There's been some that still love Nolan Jones, some giving a lot of pushback on Nolan Jones. Where do you stand on the Nolan Jones front?
Yeah, I'm more in the middle. It was a lot of fun having him last year. Yep. That was a blast. I think the Guardians would probably like to have that deal back.
They probably have issues from time to time.
they basically gave away Nolan Jones and Will Benson. I mean, gave away is maybe a little strong on Nolan Jones.
You're not far off.
But, like, you know, they've been looking for outfielders forever, and they had Will Benson and Nolan Jones, and they were just like, no, we're gonna go with Will Brennan and Miles Straw.
Hearing that out loud. Oh man.
Yeah. Tough internal evaluations there from the Guardians. I think they fell too much into this like hit tool obsession thing. But just it's gotta be an above average to plus hit tool. And you know, you shouldn't put everyone in a box like that, but it's just kind of like, would you rather have Nolan Jones than?
He's going right next to Randy. He's going, like, if you're just talking outfielders, because we just talked about him last night on their outfield show. And there's just this pool of where it came down to, like, if he's the last of like the three, awesome. That's what it came down to for me.
Honestly, like, I like Josh Lowe almost as much, if not just as much. And so, you know, I haven't drafted Jones yet. I don't think it's a bad price. Like, I think he's totally fine there.
That's what it was. It was Randy, Lowe, and Jones, all pretty much going in that same ballpark, all got that 2020 kind of appeal. And it's kind of like, which one do you trust theory? And I think it was Randy for sure was at the top for us. And then it was, I think it was Jones and Lowe, but it was, like you said, it's really close.
I mean, I'm looking at the last seven DCs and Jones is going like two rounds ahead of Lowe. So
that's not a bad discount at that point.
Yeah. So like if they were all going next to each other, I'd have them in that order you said, Randy, Jones, Lowe. But if you can wait a round or two and get Lowe, I'd rather do that.
I don't disagree with that at all.
I wouldn't be surprised if I draft Nolan Jones before the end of draft season. I just haven't done it yet.
You're with me because you said you enjoyed it. I remember I had him on like almost most of my DCs, and then I picked him up in Fab. So it was fun. It was a lot of fun. And it's just, I guess the conversation many have is he, you know, the people that do the on pace thing, which is not always the way to do stats. Well, he's on pace for 30-30 on a full season. But I think at worst, you're getting 20-something. Like that's what you got. So I'm with you. Let's skip to Josh Lowe real quick because you were talking about him. And this is a very interesting one to me because at first, I was not even on him last year. I was worried about platoons, Rays doing Rays things. As the season went on, he was not platooned anymore. He played versus lefties, and now all of a sudden that puts him on my radar for this fantasy season. And so what's your thoughts on him? Because we saw the power, we saw the speed. Average was not bad, but not great. Are we expecting better things from Lowe, or is this kind of who he is, but at least playing every day, which is always nice?
I mean, he hit 292 last year.
Oh, okay, I was thinking of someone else. You are correct. He hit very well last year.
Yeah, so I like two guys I really love from a roster construction standpoint. And I'm not saying Lowe is going to hit 290 again. But like Michael Harris and Josh Lowe to me are just perfect kind of like auction targets because they can get you, you know, 20-20 easy, maybe 25-25, maybe 20-30. And they're both going to, I think, help your batting average. And it's just so hard to find that type of production. Josh Lowe, like the Rays will still sit him against some lefties. And they might even sit him against, you know, over half the lefties they face when they're at full strength. I think there might have been an injury when he was truly playing every day last year.
I think Luke Raley was banged up now that you mention it, because towards the end of the year, he was kind of in and out.
Yeah. The key with Lowe is that you know he's not going to play truly every day. And I think you just got to leave him in your lineup. Like, unless it's a weekend series against three lefties or something like that, I think you just leave him in. The production's going to be there. Like this is a guy that to me, you know, coming up profiled as a potential five category guy, or at least a four category guy that didn't kill your batting average. And I think that, you know, obviously there was the down 2022 year when people blew a bunch of fab on him. But like, I think 2023 is closer to the real Josh Lowe than some sort of aberration. And, you know, this is his age 26 season. Does he get better as a power hitter? Maybe, possibly, you know, I'm not projecting a 292 average again, but you know, ATC's got him for 266. I think that's like a safe projection on him with room for a bit more than that. And, I love the potential of the five category production there.
Yeah, no, he's grown on me now. Like I said, they started to play him more often against lefties. We won't talk about Michael Harris, but I'm glad you mentioned him because I have done a complete 180 on Michael Harris. Like last year, not interested at all. The more I've looked at him this year, like that's a five category beast. That is great for your team, like you said. Let's talk about some pitchers here. Grayson Rodriguez. There's always been high expectations for Grayson. A couple of years ago is what it is, but last year started off rough. Goes to the minors, comes back. If you just look at that return set of stats, it was ridiculous. He looked like the guy that many fans were hoping he would be, and it turned out very, very good. Now you have to pay for him on draft day. ADP of 64 right now. Are you in on Grayson Rodriguez?
I would say I'm in towards the lower end of that that range. Like, he's kind of last seven drafts, he's got as high as 62, as low as 75. Like, I'm kind of in on him in the 70s. I'm probably not in on him in the 60s. You know, I think you have Bobby Miller, Eury Pérez right after him on the sheet. Like, to me, I kind of want whichever one of those guys is left. I think you can make a case Uri's the best of the I think he is the best of the three skills wise. He's the worst of the three from a getting wins standpoint, just because he's on the Marlins and the other two guys are on teams that could win 100 games. If all three of those guys are on the board, I'm not going to be the one that takes Grayson or the one that takes Bobby Miller. I'm going to probably take something else. I mean, you know, there's guys that could still be on the board. You know, like Joe Ryan, Kyle Bradish, like if you get shut out on one of those guys, like I don't see a drop off to those guys either. So, you know, Grayson Rodriguez is the real deal. It's just a question of, does he hold up under a full season? You know, I kind of want to see that with guys that throw that hard before I start paying like the premium price. But I don't think he's a bad pick where he's going. I see some pitchers with later ADPs that I don't see as a downgrade from him.
Yeah, I'm with you. And even the guys just going around Grayson, it's like Fried and Logan Webb right before him, right after them, Gilbert, Senga, Snell, like at least guys that, I don't know if proven is the right word, but innings wise has been proven at times. And then you got Bobby Miller, who we kind of hinted at there. He's ADP 73. I can't figure Bobby Miller out. Actually, I think I took him in a draft recently as my SP3. That is because I went aggressive on one draft finally in pitching. But like, there's some very smart people that love him. There's other people that tell me to be careful. So what's your thoughts on Bobby Miller? Because the thing with the Dodgers right now is they do have depth at pitching, but it's not the most stable depth at pitching. So Miller might be needed.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to pop in any sort of, you know, stuff. Like if you're hunting stuff, if you're hunting velocity, Bobby Miller is definitely your guy. I'm surprised that, you know, I'm surprised that the ADP isn't a little higher on him. Like there's enough kind of there that I would think some people would just be kind of gravitating to him and pushing him up a little bit more than he has been. Has there been any reporting on whether they're doing a six man or not?
Like, what the latest I heard was they are doing a six man. That's their plan. Like right now, that is their plan, which make the most sense with their rotation. So yeah, that's their goal for now. But we've heard that how many times, and it never works out for teams. But yeah.
I mean, I think the biggest knock on Miller is I just wouldn't project more than like 150-ish innings. I'd probably go like 160 with Grayson, 160 with Uri, and 150 with Bobby. So I don't know. I'm kind of agnostic on Grayson and Bobby. I think they're totally fine. When I'm on the clock in a draft, I'm probably still going to gravitate towards guys I've seen do it over a full season. Kyle Bradish is going after all these guys. Joe Ryan's going after all these guys. I trust those guys fully, and I think they've got great team context as well. Wouldn't surprise me at all if Bobby Miller is like SP3 next year. And same thing with Grayson. Like both those guys could be in that inner circle of SP1s. But I like seeing it over a full season before I start treating them like that.
I'm with you. It's usually my MO. That's why I said I finally took a Miller, not like more the diversification if he does pop thing. That's the only reason why I ended up doing it. I probably wouldn't do it in a fab league, let's put it that way. You mentioned Pérez, so we'll just go past him because I think we're all on the same page on Uri here. O'Neill Cruz, he's technically not a sophomore because I think he's been around for a bit, but hasn't really played, so might be a rookie still. But I'm just kidding. But he's supposed to be healthy, they say. Are we even buying into this at ADP 91? Because I don't know. I'll leave it at that. Are we buying into this at 91?
I'm not. You know, you don't have to be. You know, you can just kind of pass on some guys and just kind of wait and see how it goes. And like, I don't mind being wrong. Like, if O'Neal Cruz goes 30-30 and hits 255, you know, and everyone that got him at pick 90 is taking victory laps, like, that's totally fine with me. Just a little too much variance for my liking, and the bat, like the batting average, it's just, you know, it's not going to be great. So that's just not the type of guy that I'm going after inside the top 100.
Yep, I'm with you. No O'Neal Cruz for me. It's got Cole Reagans, Nick Pollock's favorite person in the world. Cole Reagans. It was an amazing run with the Royals. I don't think we can deny it. Did a lot of work with the Rangers in the offseason, or not with the Rangers, but like a drive line. I believe it was driving, or tread. It was tread, I believe, with Reagans. It was great stuff. Now the question is this repeatable for Cole Reagans? ADP's 111. Honestly, thought it would be higher because of the buzz train. But what's your thoughts on Reagans? Because obviously, like I said, very good. It's more of repeatable innings, those kind of questions.
Yeah. You know, big shout out to my co-manager Todd Whitestone for being all over Reagans last year. We had him on at least one team, and then I think I added him on an OC that I had solo based off of that. He's electric. Just the, you know, dynamite stuff from the left side. I haven't drafted him yet. It seemed like a little
too good little to be bit, true.
little too good to be true. Yeah. Like, I, one of those where you love it during the breakout, but like, I don't want to have like some teams hinging on Cole Reagans being productive for me all season. But I don't mind it. You know, I think it's a fair price. It's just, I haven't gotten there yet.
You have basically the same sentiments I do. It's I had him in a couple leagues. It was awesome to be a part of the run, and I'm sitting there on like any draft I've been in, I'm looking at that name and I'm like, man, regression could hit really hard. Do I really want to be a part of this trade? Like, it could be great, but there's a lot of what ifs with Reagans, and still close to 100 ADP. There's other not as big what ifs type things, and I'm a safe drafter, so people get bored with me sometimes, but Reagans could be a lot of fun, just to be tough here. Let's go to a guy that will be, I'm very confident, a lot of fun this year, as long as he stays healthy. And Tristan Casas, you kind of hinted at him earlier as the first baseman you like. We've got a lot of young first basemen to have fun with. Tristan Casas, we saw big things come out of 24 homers, 263 the second half, big numbers. And right now, he's kind of the front line of those young first basemen off the board around 115. So what are your thoughts on Tristan?
I mean, he is someone I'm just all in on this year. Really can't say enough good things about him. You know, he was someone that had struggled against lefties at time, or well, basically his entire minor league career. He kind of shook that issue last year, and he just, to me, you know, I know people will tell you to be careful about looking at like first half, second half splits. Mm-hmm. But I think Casas is the exact type of player where it can be instructive, because we saw him he was a completely different player, and he just really dialed in as the season went on. And I just think that the projections are just way too low on him. You know, like, I would say 275, 280 batting average, 35 to 40 homers. Like to me, he's like a top five first baseman, and he's getting drafted as the ninth first baseman. So he would be on a short list of players that I think the ADP is just way too low on.
Yeah, no, and people look at those projections, and like, we all know that not all, but a lot used a lot of like the 3-year averages or something in those ranges. So it will skew Casas quite a bit. And the second half adjustments, and you mentioned that, and that's a great conversation piece as well. Like, should we use them or not? With the young players, I love to use them because it shows me that they matured, they grew. Like, it wasn't a 1 week or 2 week, it was a full half of baseball. Like, that was big in my mind, and we'll see where that goes. And that leads into Spencer Torkelson. The development continued, and one thing I always said with Torque, because I was aggressive on the Fab Wire kind of a couple weeks before he really blew up, just playing DFS, you kind of saw there's something there. It's coming. Like, he'd have a couple really good games, a couple, but it was like the power was legit. And I kept telling people, this was the number one pick for a reason, guys. Not all number one picks work. I get it. But the guy had elite hit tools in the minor leagues power-wise. And so I'm interested in this. And he burst onto the scenes with all kinds of power in Detroit, where people said it's not possible. He had 31 homers, did hit .233, so that's a bummer. But ADP of 125, like, I know Costas is, I'm with you on Costas over Torque, but what's your thoughts on Torkelson?
Yeah, I mean, I buy the projections on Torque. You know, I think he's going, I think he's probably a slight value where he's going. Maybe not a screaming value because of the batting average. The issue is that the guy that's going right next to him in drafts is the guy that I'm taking over him in Josh Naylor. Like,
yeah.
I love Josh Naylor. I think he's five category or like four and a half category, four yeah. category. But like, I'll go for the guy with the .280 batting average and slightly fewer homers over Torque there. But like, if I'm trying to get Naylor and someone takes him ahead of me and Torque's sitting there, I'll take Torque.
Gotcha. That's fair. Yeah, no. Yeah, we can't draft together if you're on Naylor and Jimenez and all these guys. This is not going to work for me, James. Not at all right now. Naylor's been Team Bubba for a couple years, and his ADP keeps climbing. It's not fun. Let's talk Jordan Walker. This is a guy I have no clue what to do with. There's some very smart people that loved the finish of the season, loved what they saw. People even before last year obviously had the big home runs in F Florida, whatever they call it. That didn't sound right, but you know what I meant. But what's your thoughts on Jordan Walker? Because he's going around 123 right now, and people are pretty high on him.
Yeah, I'm not in on him. I understand. So I think I would be in on Jordan Walker if he was just playing at a position that he should be playing.
Third
base. I don't like drafting guys that are playing the outfield who shouldn't be in the outfield, especially when they're 6'6". And I think he added muscle this offseason, which is just not the direction I would want him to go. I'd want him to just be as lean as possible. Like, he should be a first baseman. Like, he's basically got the same body as like Derek Lee. Like he should not be running around in the outfield. I'm worried he's going to get injured. I'm worried he's going to take his defensive struggles to the plate with him. I think the Cardinals have really done him a disservice with the way they've kind of organized this roster to the point where he has to play right field. Maybe he just makes a bunch of strides and proves me wrong, but you know, I love the talent. You know, he hits the ball really hard. He's a good athlete for his size. He's so young, you know, he's still 21. He turns 22 in May. So he's got a lot going for him, but, you know, kind of in that O'Neill Cruz bin of like it's okay to just pass on a guy, even if you know he's very talented. Just not a guy I'm building around.
Yep. No, I'm 100%. With you on that one. I'm not there. Another guy I'm not there on is Anthony Volpe. 2020 is great. We've talked about a bunch of guys so far that can do that. 21-24 last year, but it came with a .209 batting average. And that just doesn't do it for me. Obviously, I don't think he's that bad, but at an ADP of 133, he's got to be a lot better for me. So what's your thoughts on Volpe?
Yeah, this is not the year. I think next year I might be in on Volpe. I think he's still a year away from kind of getting to where he needs to be as a pure hitter. I don't want to take, like, I'm not that desperate for stolen bases that I'm going to take a guy that might hit like .230, where he's going. So, you know, give me Dansby Swanson all day over Volpe. Give me, you know, like, I don't think Ezekiel Tovar's line's going to be much different from Volpe's this year, and he's going three rounds later. So
Tovar doesn't get any love, it seems like. So that's a fun one. Zach Geloff of the A's. I know I'm very biased, so I'll keep quiet and I'll let you tell me how wrong I am right now. But 267 average, 14-14 in 69 games last year. Showed power and speed in the minors as well. There is swing and miss. Very aware of that. 138 ADP. So do you like Geloff? Am I an idiot? You can say idiot to me. It's fine. What are your thoughts on Zach Geloff?
No, I don't think you're an idiot at all. I think
Bloomfield.
I think the main knock on Geloff is just the terrible lineup.
Ballpark lineup. Yeah.
Yeah, ballpark.
Ballpark might be good actually if they end up in the Vegas AAA stadium.
Right. Yeah, it's more the lineup than the park to me. Yeah. Like I just, you know, he could get under 80 runs, under 80 RBI.
Yep.
But you look at the guys he's going around. You know, Thairo Estrada, Tommy Edman. I think he's just a slightly better version of those guys. With maybe a bit more room to kind of provide surplus value than those guys. So yeah. I don't mind it at all, especially if you're, you know, he kind of just checks off that middle infielder with power and speed that we're always looking for in that range. Like we're all looking for it. He's one of them. So I don't mind it. I just think he sets you a little bit behind in the runs and RBI.
100%. Yeah. That is the downfall. I will gratefully admit that team stinks, but everyone knows that. Hunter Brown, this is another one of these like pitchers where, you know, we know we've heard the skill set's really good, but I think he just got worn out last year is what I'm thinking. Maybe wrong, but it felt that way. Mm-hmm. ADP's 180, so it's not like a rich price tag compared to those other early guys we talked about. It's things a little more affordable. Are you on a guy like Hunter Brown maybe after that first full year building up the workload and coming back this year?
Yeah, I had him on a few teams last year, and it was definitely frustrating to have him kind of give back a lot of that value in the final, 6 weeks or so of his season. And I didn't draft him in my like five early DCs, but I think he's a totally fine value where he's going. I agree with him wearing down idea. You know, the big thing that everyone's always wondered about him is like, is he gonna throw enough strikes? And I think he's proven that so far in 176 big league innings, 8.3% walk rate. Like that is awesome compared to what he showed in the minors at some spots. And I think you know there was some BABIP bad luck last year. He had a he had a 330 BABIP against last year, 261 batting average against last year. So, you know, the whip is still probably the weak spot for Brown, but on that team, you know, he could get you 15 wins. So I definitely don't mind the price on him.
Yep. I'm starting to slowly buy in on Hunter Brown at that price tag. That's like SP4, SP5, depending on how you're drafting. That seems pretty good to me. A couple more here and we'll round it out. James Outman. Last year, the final numbers looked strong. 248, 23, and 16. Projections kind of think he's okay. But ADP is 197. I guess the question is playing time for James Outman. How do we feel about that? But are you in, are you out on Outman for 2024?
I'm out on the price. Because he's going to get platoon. Like he just, like I think he's, it might not be in every game type of platoon, but they just have so many, they've just got so many pieces. No shame in being platooned in this lineup. Nope. You have those, like we know Betts and Otani and Freeman are going to play every day. We know Will Smith's going to just play as much as he always has. Basically, we know Max Muncy's role. But then those bottom four spots in the lineup, there's just going to be days off for those guys. And there's guys that are going to actually play every day going around where he's going. And obviously you love having a piece of that Dodgers lineup, but it's less exciting to have a piece of like the bottom third of that lineup than the top half of it. So, Jack Sawinski is going three rounds later. I think they're basically the same guy.
That's a good comp. I like Jack quite a bit, playing every day, Captain Jack. Brandon Faught, talk about a guy that turned things around because it was ugly, ugly, ugly. Given, I'll grain of salt it, when you're getting yo-yoed back and forth, that can't be easy on these younger players. But once he kind of settled in, got good, the postseason was outstanding. So he left, you know, he did that Christian Javier thing. Let's leave everybody with a great taste in our mouth come draft season. And right now you have to pay an ADP of 213 for Brandon Faught. Are we in on this one? Because between the minors and the bigs, he threw 156 innings. So stretched out isn't the problem with Brandon Faught. But overall production, who knows? What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm all in at that cost. It's a big bummer that he had that postseason run, because he would have just been such an obvious buy and he would have been going like around pick 300. So we kind of get that taken away from us a little bit, but I still think he's a great value there. He was at one point, I think he was my number one pitching prospect before coming off the list, in part because of that workload. And he showed that in 2022 as well. This is a guy that's just fully stretched out. He has been for a couple of years. The slider is a monster pitch. I like the team context. I like throwing to Gabriel Moreno. Just, you know, looking at the pitchers that go around him, like I like him significantly more than most of those guys.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. You and the Welsh were always big on the Faught train. Every time he came back, like, trust it, it's there. And I'm with you because you saw enough improvements to end the second half that would have been great. We're good. I'm in. But then the postseason just took it to a whole nother level. Last player I'm going to mention here is Christopher Sanchez, another young pitcher. He's pitching for the Phillies, obviously. ADP is a 243. We saw some good with Sanchez. Ratios are good. Strikeouts not bad. I imagine the ratios won't be that good. But as a, you know, around 240, 250 ADP guy, is Sanchez the guy that interests you at all?
Yeah, another great Todd Whitestone ad for a couple of our teams last season. He was just so dynamite down the stretch last year. I'm more of a believer than a doubter. And, you know, this is a guy that he might have been, I want to check if I ever ranked him on my top 400. But like, basically, like, he's someone that I was never in on. And I think the key with pitchers, especially, you know, unproven pitchers, is like, I'm more willing to buy in if you show me something impressive over a 6-8 start sample than with hitters. Like with hitters, you could be super unlucky or super lucky over like a 2-month stretch. Like I think with pitchers, when they're showing you legitimate skills, like with Sanchez's changeup, with his ability to generate ground balls, you know, not expecting him to repeat that 4% walk rate, but obviously good command. Like I believe what he showed us last year. He's not a guy that you're going to want to start every single week, but I like the price. There's enough kind of doubt, I think, out there in the market that the price is going to stay pretty solid with him.
Yep. Well, that'll make Bloomfield happy to hear. That's, I guess, number one late round. I want to go get him, guys. So perfect. We made it through the whole list. Not sure we were going to get there, but we got one listener question before we head on out of here. John H. asks, James, any thoughts on playing time projections for CES and Westberg? Westberg is a guy that didn't make the list, but what are your thoughts on playing time for those two?
Well, yeah, we kind of hit on CES. Yeah. Just kind of, I expect him to play most days. It's not a 100% lock he plays most days. I love Westberg. I think he's going to play a ton. Like, I think he's, no projection system is saying he's an everyday player, but I think he's closer to an everyday player than a part-time player. Just a really good athlete, really good defender, can play all over. He's got that great middle corner eligibility. Doesn't have the highest ceiling in terms of the homers or the stolen bases, but he could get you to like 15-10 maybe. Maybe even like 18-12, that type of thing. The fact he's right-handed hurts because of the park, but he's just such a good real-life baseball player and a guy that they can move all over the place. And with the eligibility, with the fact that he will run a little bit, I really like Westberg this year.
Yeah, I'm slowly getting there. I don't think I have very much of him, maybe one share. I guess my only concern is, and we're not going to go into this, obviously, but I know they have other options that they can be bringing up in the infield, per se, sooner than later. So how that all squeezes out, there's definitely room for others to come and Westberg to succeed. But I'm just curious how that all plays out with Baltimore. All right, we'll wrap it up there, my friend. As always, appreciate you joining me. Before we head on out of here, remind everybody where they can find you and what you got going on.
Yeah, rotowire.com. Definitely a great time to sign up for the site. A lot of great tools. You know, if you're in dynasty leagues, we got you covered. If you're in redraft leagues, like if you don't even care about like prospects or dynasty at all, you got to have a RotoWire subscription for the projected starters grid in season. Like that's so worth that's the
go-to.
It's worth the subscription alone right there. Right. You can follow me on Twitter at RealJRAnderson.
Yeah, man, you guys probably are if you're listening to this show, but if you're not for some weird reason, please go follow him. And again, I appreciate you joining me as always. Good time. We'll have to do it again sometime.
Thanks for having me.
Always. This is Bench with Bubba, episode 640. Catch y'all next time.